I'm delighted to welcome Tony O'Grady, and Tony is a member of Citizens Assembly on biodiversity loss. And Tony has cycled all the way over from where did you cycle from, Tony?
Beaumont Hospital, Victoria.
Beaumont Hospital, wow. And how long did it take you?
Only about 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Okay.
Cycling a bit slowly this morning though, so.
Yeah, it's hard to cycle in this weather, it's so cold.
It is.
Mm-hmm. But thank you for doing that, and thank you for coming
into
studio.
My pleasure.
We really appreciate it. So, Tony, tell us all about this Citizens Assembly on biodiversity loss. How did you become part of that?
So there was a letter sent out at the start of the year. I think it was to 20,000 households around the country. And it wasn't to named individuals. It was to the household themselves. And they were asked to volunteer somebody to become part of the Citizens Assembly on Biodiversity Loss. So I volunteered myself. And then you go through a process. You apply online and say that you're interested. And then they select 100 people based on, I think, gender, age and socioeconomic status. So initially, actually, I didn't get called. And then I got an email to say, if you're interested in being a substitute, if someone drops out, then please add your name. So I said I was, and I got called later in the year then to join it.
Okay, and how did you feel when you got the call then?
Yeah, I was pleased. I mean, I would have an interest in nature in general and the environment, so I was happy to be part of the assembly, yeah.
Great. I know you have a family in Tipperary, and they're... they have beehives, and like you would have grown up in the countryside.
Yeah.
So you have a love of that, you know.
I'm a culture at heart, Victoria.
You're a culture at heart, but you're living on the north side of Dublin and working on the north side.
Yeah, that's right. I've been a long time in Dublin now, 27 years, I think, or so. But look, I have an attachment to the countryside.
Yes.
I'm lucky that I have a bit of a back garden, and I like looking out the window at a bit of a green space. So, I'll always have that attachment to the countryside. I don't come from a farming background, but I live outside. I'm from outside Roscrea in Tipperary. So, I have a close attachment to nature, I would say, yeah.
Excellent. So, can you explain to us what is biodiversity?
So, I suppose it can be described as all the living creatures on the planet, so and the variety of life that we have. So, it's from the blue whale down to the small ant running around in the ground. And also, you know, you can include microorganisms, bacteria and viruses and so on. So, it's all the living creatures on Earth, and, of course, including plants as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, tell me, how did the process work for you to get involved with the Citizens Assembly for this biodiversity loss?
So, as I said, I was drafted in as a substitute, and I missed the inaugural meeting in Dublin Castle. And then also they had a field trip to, they brought the citizens to Dublin Port and to Bull Island and out to Turvey Woods as well. So, unfortunately, I missed those first two events, but I came in then for the bulk of the assembly meetings, which were held in September. There was one in September, one in October, and two in November. So that's where the meat of the business went on, if you like. So we were given a huge amount of information in terms of presentations from experts in all areas of biodiversity. So we would have had talks from experts in ecology and people associated with forestry, Cuilce, people who are involved in farming, of course. Agriculture is a huge part of it. Urban planning, and also, of course, the freshwater and marine environment. So we were given a huge amount of presentations, and also there was a huge amount of information provided on the website. The Citizens Assembly website is very good for the public in general, in terms of providing information. We also had a section ourselves that provided those with a huge amount of information leading up to each meeting. So, we had publications from different groups and videos and EcoEye programs and so on. So, to be honest, it was very difficult to get through all the information that we had, but we didn't want for anything in terms of learning about biodiversity and the problems with the loss of biodiversity at the moment. So, it was a hugely educational process. I really enjoyed it from that point of view. I knew something about it beforehand, but learned an awful amount through the year, really, yeah.
It's brilliant. And I suppose you're with like-minded people who are passionate about that, and you can bounce off each other and I suppose help bring this to its fruition and get the job done.
For sure.
Victoria. Yeah. Did you know anybody?
No. The 100 people that were chosen, Eivín Húlvaan was the chairperson, mm-hmm. so she was number 100, and then there was 99 of us. And I just have to say, Eivín was brilliant as a chairperson in terms of pulling everything together and keeping everything on track. I didn't know any of the other 99 citizens, but they varied in age and you know where they came from around the country, and we had all people from all walks of life. We had farmers. I think we had 3 or 4 farmers involved in the process. And I guess all of these people would have had an interest because, you didn't fill in the application unless you were interested in this kind of thing. But, we had students all the way up to, I don't want to cast aspersions, but I think some people who were 70, in their 70s, maybe even 80s. So people with a huge, vast knowledge of what's happened in the last 40, 50 years around biodiversity loss.
And, of course, there are educators through their
for
experience.
Sure, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it was brilliant, and the process itself, the 4 meetings that I'm part of, and we've 1 more to go in January. But the process itself was really well run. So we would have been put at a table for each meeting with 5 other citizens, and then a facilitator and a note taker. And the facilitators were excellent in terms of making sure everybody got their opinion heard. And everybody got a chance to talk at each of the meeting. Nobody dominated, really. And then, the next meeting that came along, you were sitting at a table with different people. So there was never an opportunity to, I suppose, get comfortable in a group that you're in, because, there's always a risk that somebody might take charge and you let that person take charge and so on. So the process itself was really well run. And I think, speaking to the people that I did speak at the assembly, everybody felt that their voice was heard, And the meetings themselves were very good. There was good opportunity for social interaction as well. We had a meal on the Saturday evening as well, and opportunities for a couple of drinks and a chat and a sing song maybe as well. So
that's a really enjoyable process. Bond.
Yeah, it is. It is. And actually, we were supposed to finish up there a couple of weeks ago, but because there's still some work to do, we have to come back in January, as I said. But you could see, even after the 4 weeks, there's people there who are, I've no doubt, are friends for life. So it's a really good process. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely, and you're brilliant to do it.
Look, if you have an interest in that kind of thing, Victoria, it's easy to put your hand up.
Yeah. Of course, Tony, absolutely. So, can you tell us and our listeners what are the problems associated with biodiversity loss?
I suppose maybe a lot of people know this, maybe they don't, but the first thing that springs to mind is our dependence on biodiversity for food, our food supply. So, if you think of insects and pollination of plants and so on, without that, there would be a severe shortage of food throughout the world. So that's first and foremost. We're dependent on biodiversity for our food supply, but also for clean air, the air that we breathe, clean water as well. I think probably COVID brought it home to people, the importance of a walk in the woods. So the importance of biodiversity to our mental health can't be underestimated. Victoria, you don't live too far from St. Anne's Wood. So just picture yourself on a spring morning walking through St. Anne's Wood. You might be lucky enough to see a fox running across the path in front of you. If you look up, you might see in some of those tall trees beside Pitch 10, you might see a couple of cranes cackling away at each other. And then if you cross the road across to the causeway and Bull Island and that beautiful resource and all the birds that migrate down over the winter to Bull Island, and then you go out onto the beach, onto Dollymount, and walk down the beach, and you can see, maybe a couple of seal pups on a little sandbank between Dollymount and Sutton. There's no way but you're going to be uplifted after an experience like that. So I don't think it can be underestimated, the importance of nature and the natural environment to our mental well-being.
Here, that is absolutely it. I mean, we're all bogged down with this digital life that we're living and the fast-paced life between families, children, work, the stresses and strains that all that brings. And you're right, I do live near St. Anne's, and what a wonderful place it is. And we've got to cherish it and nurture it and make sure it stays. And you know, we can enjoy it for another how many years. But it's kind of scary. I even see when I walk Dolly Mount, I can see the corrosion with the island there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I see it disappearing. I actually do from my eye line.
No, it's an ongoing problem. And I mean, biodiversity loss is inextricably linked to climate change. And a lot of people will know the problems associated with climate change. Mm. We know the weather events, the extreme weather events we're having, but there's no doubt there's a rise in sea level. But those harsh storms that we've been having over the last couple of years, we can already see they're having an impact on a place like Bull Island and around Dollymount, for sure.
Okay, sure. They're saying that in, is it 50 years' time, Ringsend, Sandymount, parts of Clontarf, East Wall.
Could be underwater,
Could be underwater. And for people who don't believe that, you know, what do you say to them? Because there are a few, I've had discussions with people who say, not at all. We've had extreme weather events over the years. You look at 1969 when we had that great snow. I think I'm getting that date right, I'm not sure. But, you know, for the non-believers who really don't agree with the scientists, what is your message to them?
Oh, look, it's hard. And I think there'll always be a percentage of people who won't be convinced by the science, but I'm a scientist myself, Victoria, so I believe in it. And actually, at the Citizens' Assembly, I remember one of the early meetings, one of the citizens asked a question and said, is biodiversity loss really a problem? I don't think it really exists. But we had presentations from all of those experts over the 4 weekends, and you know, that person was well convinced at the end of it that it is a significant problem, in the same way that climate change is as well. So I think, you know, you only have to look at the evidence, listen to the experts.
Educate yourself.
Everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet in terms of climate loss. It's the very odd person that doesn't believe it's a reality now, I think.
Okay, and what can we do? What can I do today? What can people do in their homes to educate our children, our teenagers, you know?
Yeah, no, education is a huge part of it. And actually, that's going to be, we're putting together the recommendations to send to the Oireachtas at the end of the Citizens' Assembly. And education is a huge part of that. So, and it needs to start at primary school level. So, you know, if you can think back to your primary school days, Victoria, I can remember the nature table in the corner of the classroom.
Absolutely. You know, so Tony, you bring me right back there.
I know. Mm-hmm. And the problem is it doesn't exist in every classroom anymore. Nature is not part of the curriculum as a standard, subject to be taught. In primary school, I think children are still brought on walks to the woods and so on. But once you get to secondary school, it takes a back seat. And maybe in transition year, some of the students will get, you know, part of the sort of nature and environment agenda presented to them. But in general, it's lost and it's not part of the curriculum. And so for us in the Citizens' Assembly, we felt that should come back in, at primary level, secondary level, and indeed at third level as well. And there should be a career path for people who are interested in subjects such as biodiversity. Another one of our recommendations is likely to be that there should be a biodiversity officer, at least one in every council around the country. So there should be a clear career path to somebody who has an interest in the environment and saving the resources, the natural resources that we have. And that can only happen if we have it as part of the educational curriculum. And look, again, if you have people educated, they won't be coming out of school questioning the climate change, questioning whether biodiversity is really necessary or whether the loss of biodiversity is really happening. So education is key to this, for sure.
Okay, that's brilliant to hear that, you know, pushing it into second level. I never thought about that, actually. Yeah. I know in my son's school, and I think your son goes there too, I mentioned it, Ard School Rish, there is a little group, I think it's called the Amber Group, and they discuss, you know, these sort of topics.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not part of the curriculum.
No, it's voluntary. It's still an elective. And actually, we had a couple of presentations from secondary school teachers on the last weekend, and you know, they were brilliant. They were so enthusiastic about it. One of them took it upon himself to bring back in the nature table. And in fact, he actually had set up a porta cabin, a room to the side of the school that was was devoted to nature and nature education. And he arranged plenty of field trips and so on for all of his students. Again, this was in TY, and he was trying to bring it in to, you know, to the other years within the secondary school. So there are teachers out there who have, excuse me, huge enthusiasm. But they're not supported, you know, they're not rewarded and paid for it anyway, and it's not something that they have to do. A lot of it is done in their own time. So we need that to become a structured part of the curriculum, and that's down to the Department of Education, the government, to do that.
Okay, and how slow is a process like that, Tony?
Yeah, I think it'll take a while. I mean, we've come up, I think, with over 150 recommendations, Victoria. It'll be January before they're all sent on to the Oireachtas. But a lot of this, you know, a lot of it is down to money and finance, and also you need a champion at governmental level to push this. If you don't have somebody driving this, it won't really happen. Things can get bogged down and slowed up. And also, people might look at biodiversity as a nice to have rather than a must have. And
really?
And it is a must have. If you know enough about it, you know that if we continue the way we are, we're going to be in trouble in terms of, as I mentioned already, the food that we eat, clean water, clean air, and so on. So people might look and say, well, there's a housing crisis. Money should be diverted into that. Lots of other issues. Healthcare are big problems as well. Money should be going into that rather than saving the birds and the bees. But we need to look at the big picture here. It is critical at this stage. It's as critical as the climate emergency. So hopefully the government will take note. And what's encouraging is it was the government who decided to set up the Citizens' Assembly on biodiversity loss. And also they declared, along with declaring a climate emergency a couple of years ago, they also declared an emergency in terms of biodiversity loss. So this has been driven by the government. In previous citizens' assemblies, they have taken on board a lot of the recommendations. So our hope would be that they'll do the same for this citizens' assembly.
Okay, here's hoping.
Yeah.
I would like to ask you, what are the causes of biodiversity loss in Ireland?
Yeah, that's a big question, Victoria. We could be here for quite a while talking about that. I also have to say that I'm just a citizen, so I'm not an expert. We've got a lot of experts presenting to us through the four weekends. But, you know, it was clear to me there are a couple of key drivers. And, you know, you could argue that in the last 40, 50 years, we've become a very wealthy country. There's been huge economic growth in Ireland and throughout the world as well. Mm-hmm. And the consequence of that is that we've been taken from nature. We've been harnessing nature's resources to drive that economic growth. And that's causing the problem. You can't keep taken from nature the whole time because eventually it will suffer. And that's what's happening now. So you could argue that it's the economic growth over the last 40, 50 years that's caused the biodiversity loss. But then if you drill down and look closer at it, one of the areas, and I have to say I'm not in any way anti-farmer. As I say, I come from the countryside. I have huge sympathy for farmers. But Ireland, of course, is a huge agricultural and meat and food producing country. And, you know, for the last 20, 30 years, the EU approach has been to, you know, promote growth, encourage countries like Ireland to produce food, produce more and more food to feed Ireland and to feed the EU and so on. And so farmers have been incentivized and paid to produce more. And as a consequence, farming practices have become much more intensive. And that's had a huge impact on biodiversity loss. So if I can just give you some examples.
That would be great.
Yeah. So around farming, you know, there's a big emphasis on, let's say, cattle and dairy. So we've got more cattle, and more cattle need more grass. So you add fertilizer to the grass to make sure it's grown. Fertilizer runs off into waterways and streams, contaminates and kills the creatures in the streams and rivers. And also has an adverse impact on the soil, of course, as well. And all of those creatures living beneath the soil. When we talk about biodiversity, we always think about land and think about what we can see and maybe in the sea as well. But there's a huge amount going on under the land and in the soil as well. And all the treatment of land with pesticides and fertilizer and so on is having an adverse impact. And along with that, the approach with a lot of agriculture is to grow single crop ryegrass to feed cattle and so on. And so you have a loss of biodiversity and a loss of a variety of different plants that could be grown on farmland. So farmers have cleared away land so they can grow grass to feed their cattle. And they've also drained the land as well. So any damp areas, wet areas or ponds in farmland have been drained away so they can grow more grass to feed the cattle or grow more crops or whatever it is. And this draining of wetlands throughout the country is having a huge impact as well on the creatures that live and grow around these wetlands. And also hedgerows. If you think driving through the countryside in Ireland, you're looking at the beautiful hedgerows left and right, and all the ones that divide fields throughout the countryside. They're an essential habitat for so many different creatures, mammals and insects. A lot of hedgerows have been cut away to create again more space to grow grass or crops or whatever it is to feed the animals. So it's destruction of habitats where all of these creatures live, and as a consequence of that, a lot of these creatures are dying off. And so that could be the insects and the mammals, but also it's destruction of the plant life as well in all of these different places. So that's just one example, and it's not to come down heavy on the farmers, but it is a fact that it is a cause of a lot of the biodiversity loss. If we look elsewhere at forestry, for example, Cuilchar, the national body that manage forestry throughout Ireland, and they were given a mandate when they were set up back in the 70s, I think, to produce wood for profit. And so as a consequence, they've sowed and planted predominantly a single type of tree, the Sitka spruce, which is a fast-growing tree that we can cut down within 20 or 30 years and profit can be made for this.
Right.
But what that does is, again, create a monoculture of a single plant that isn't great for the creatures that live in woods or live in those areas.
Okay.
And again, we've had a lot of forests planted around boglands, and those boglands have been drained as a result of, you know, planting these single species forests. And the natural forests that we would have in Ireland, the broadleaf forests, a lot of those have been cut away and haven't been replaced. So, in fact, I think in Ireland, we've one of the lowest percentage of woodland throughout the whole of Europe. So, although
the
we like
lowest
to think of,
percentage?
Yeah, the lowest percentage. So we like to think of ourselves as a green and pleasant land, but it's green grass and it's all rye grass, unfortunately. The problems, there are problems with the way forestry is done in Ireland, and that needs to be addressed as well. And it needs to change. And to be fair to Cuilchar, if you look, you can see ads on the telly, and I think also on their website at the moment, they're pushing the biodiversity agenda now and trying to promote biodiversity within their forests and create spaces for nature within the forest as well. So it is starting to happen, but that whole issue of forestry and profit needs to be separated. We can't be growing woods to make money. We have to start planting trees for nature. So it's the right tree in the right location. That's what we have to look at from now on when it comes to forestry. And if I could just say one other thing then as well. So we've got agriculture and forestry. If we look at, you know, again, this is back to economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
It is urban development. I mean, if you think about Dublin and how it's spread out, the sprawl over the last 20, 30 years, and it continues that way. And of course, other cities around the country are the same. And even Roscrea, where I'm from, it's unrecognisable now compared to what it was 20, 30 years ago.
When you were growing up.
Yeah,
for
sure. So, I mean, it's an increased population. People need houses to live in. And so you have that spread of houses. And of course, this results in the destruction of habitats when you're, you know, building new houses and so on. And a lot of the building that goes on these days, it isn't carried out with nature in mind. And there are ways to do that. We got a presentation from a town planner from Utrecht in the Netherlands, which you would be familiar with.
Mm.
And they've shown that it can be done. You know, you can reorganize your town. You can plan for the future with nature in mind. So, you know, instead of building right up close to a riverbank, take it 10, 20 meters back and leave that space between the river and the apartments you're going to build for nature. And nature is very, very resilient, and it will survive in these small pockets. And it will, if you give back, if you rewild areas, as they call it, mm-hmm. nature will recover very quickly. We've seen that. So it just needs to be given that space.
It needs to be given that space, yes.
Yeah.
You know, the Dutch are a great model, aren't they, for a lot of things?
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah, and Scandinavia in general. I mean, for sure, the Swedes, the Finns, the Danish, they have it nailed down when it comes to this kind of thing. There are lots of countries out there that have shown the way. And in fact, one of the things that I think the keynote recommendation, it was announced on the news there after our last meeting, was that the Citizens' Assembly recommend that the government hold a referendum to insert a clause in the constitution to give rights to nature. So that was the big take-home message from our last meeting. So hopefully that will happen. And that has happened in other countries. In Canada, there's a river that's been given legal rights. And recently in Spain as well, a lake was given legal rights. And what that means is, you know, nobody can do anything to that lake or that river that's going to impact on nature. So, for example, the river in Canada, there was plans to put in a dam and generate electricity and so on and so forth. But the because the rights of nature were embedded in the constitution in Canada, somebody brought a case and said, no, you can't do that because that's going to adversely impact on nature if you insert that dam into the river. And so there was nothing done about it. But unfortunately in Ireland at the moment, nature doesn't have any rights. So people can go willy-nilly and build their house here, there and everywhere and plant trees and do all of these things. And there's no recourse. There's nobody going to put a stop to it. Even though, again, there's a lot of EU regulations there, a lot of EU laws that say what you can and can't do around the environment. But enforcement is, we're not very good at enforcement in Ireland. There's lots of regulations and lots of things that we should and shouldn't be doing, but enforcement just isn't there. And there aren't enough punishments, and the punishments aren't severe enough for companies who pollute rivers and do those kind of things. So if the rights of nature are embedded in the constitution, I think that will change everything. That will mean there'll be laws introduced that give much greater protection to the land and sea and the creatures that live there. So we would hope that's gonna happen. But the first thing that has to happen is the government have to bring it to the people, and then of course the people decide whether to go ahead with that or not.
It's a powerful message, though, Tony, that you've just said. You know, without the constitution,
without the constitutional change, it'll probably still continue the way it is. I think it has to come. That, you know, that's a huge thing if it goes into the constitution, and if the people are allowed vote on that, I think even that in itself will make people more aware of the problem and the issue. Because for sure, if we go down that road, there'll be a huge amount of information and advertisements around biodiversity and what it means to people. So even in itself, I think the voting process will be an educational thing for people. They'll understand maybe hopefully a bit more after the vote, whatever way it goes, you know.
Well, hopefully it can be done sooner rather than later.
Well, the wheels turn slowly on these things, Victoria, but we can't afford to wait too long. It is similar to the climate crisis we're in, but it may well be worse than the climate crisis, the loss of biodiversity. So we can't sit in our hands for too long in this kind of thing, you know.
So let's move it along. You've repeatedly mentioned the loss, and to me, loss is it's a sad thing, and I feel sad, although you're a mine of information, and thank you so much for bringing this to us and to the people, you know, our listeners. We really appreciate it, but it is sad to think that.
No, it is. And I suppose, you know, we would have thought of loss before as maybe something that was happening in other countries. And you see those sad pictures of, you know, the polar bears getting skinnier, standing on a little block of ice that's floating out in the sea. And you think it's far removed from us, but it's not really. If we look at, and I mentioned earlier on, Bull Island, curlews, you see curlews coming in, and they've got a very distinctive call, the curlew. And you see them, especially this time of the year, they migrate from up north. And it's a lovely sound when you hear it, and they're a bird with a long beak, and you see them drilling away into the sands trying to get food. So it's a beautiful creature, but we have our own population of curlews. It's increased significantly during the migration period. But when they go back up north, we still have a population here, but that population has been decimated in the last 10 years. We're down to very small numbers of breeding curlews within Ireland. And it's, you know, it's going to be another 2, 3, 4 years maybe, and we won't have any curlews at all. And I can remember as a kid, my dad used to talk to me about the corncrake. And it had a very distinctive call, the corncrake, and I was lucky enough to hear it once. But that's almost gone in Ireland as well, that bird. And again, it's because of the destruction of its habitat and the kind of food that it feeds on. So there's a small pocket, I think, up in Belmullet. There's one guy who's actually, after buying, I think, 3 or 4 acres of land, and he's grown plants that specifically target corncrakes to try and bring them back into that region. And I think he has had some success. But throughout the rest of the country, you could probably count on one hand the number of corncrakes that are around. So it is happening a lot closer to home as well. And I also would like to give this example. I can remember as a kid when we were in the car and we would be driving down the countryside and we'd get back to the house and the front of the car would be covered in insects, the windscreen and the bonnet and everything. I do that now and there's hardly anything. There might be one or two flies on the bonnet and that's it. So the insect life has been hugely decimated in our lifetime, Victoria. This isn't something that's happened over a number of generations. It's in our lifetime.
Our lifetime.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that struck me when we were having the meetings, one of the presenters said that we need to learn to be good ancestors. We have to be good ancestors for the people that come after us. So for our children and grandchildren, it's essential that we act now. If we don't, we're leaving nothing behind for them. We're leaving just trouble, in both in terms of the climate anyway, but also in all of those problems that I highlighted there around food, clean water, clean air, and the lack of the recreational opportunities that nature and the environment give us. All of that is going to be gone, and it would be a shame on us if we allow that to happen. So we need to be good ancestors.
Tony, I feel like bursting into tears. I'm a bit overwhelmed. No, seriously.
No, but Victoria, again, it's important. You know, like the climate crisis, we can sit back and say it's too big. It's other countries. They need to do their bit as well. But we live on an island. We're an island nation. And we can take a lot of steps now ourselves individually to arrest the loss and to reverse it, because as I mentioned earlier, nature will recover, but just give it a chance. And if I can just highlight a couple of things that can be done.
Please
so
do.
If you know, I mentioned earlier on, at governmental level, they need to take the steps. We need to have a champion there that drives this agenda and says biodiversity is critical and we need to look after nature and the environment. At community level, there's loads of brilliant groups out there. We had a presentation from the Merlin Woods group. They were a group of people who got together and decided that there was a wood down in Galway that was left to rack and ruin. There was just rubbish been strewn, thrown everywhere, and it looked awful. It was an eyesore. And they took it upon themselves to clean up the wood, to put pathways through it, to plant plants specifically for nature. And they've spent years looking after that woods, and now it's a beautiful amenity for the people of Galway. So there are brilliant community groups around there, and you'll have no problem finding one close to home. I know there's beach cleaning groups for Dollymount and all of those kind of things. There'll be no problem finding a community group to support and help in terms of their actions for nature and the environment. And even at a personal level, if you're lucky enough to have a garden, we in the past and even now we're still probably a bit obsessed with having a pretty garden and nice flowers and all of this. Just leave a corner of your garden or all of it, even leave it back to nature. Let it go wild. You might have heard of this No Mow May slogan. So that says, you know, don't mow your grass in May, because that gives a chance for the likes of dandelions and clover to grow, and the insects need the food from those plants at that time of the year. If you're cutting your grass in May, it's not available to those insects, and so they suffer as a result. So there's a lot you can do personally. If you're lucky enough to have a bit of green space, you know, just leave it, go back to nature. And that's brilliant. You don't have to put as much work into it. Don't use pesticides. Don't use feed and weed in your garden. It doesn't need to be a lush green grass. Mm-hmm. If there's a weed, and I'm using inverted commas mm-hmm. here, let it grow. The weed is going to be food for some creature that's out there, you know. So there's a lot we can do, as I say, at governmental level, community and individual level as well.
Okay,
you know?
Brilliant tips. Tony, our time is upon us, but you don't be a stranger to Near FM.
No worries.
We'd love to have you back. It's been a really brilliant conversation, and I hope we've given people food for thought on biodiversity loss and how important it is right here, right now, not tomorrow.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And not, you know, I'm all right, Jack, yeah, in my lovely yeah. bubble here.
Yeah.
That's another problem for somebody else.
Yeah.
You've just made it very clear that we as individuals, as communities, can actually make a difference, and we have to start right now. So thank you, Tony, for coming in. I hope
no
you
problem.
Enjoyed that as much
I
as
did.
I enjoyed having you.
For sure, Victoria. My pleasure.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks
thank
a lot.
You. And I would like to wish you and your family a very happy Christmas.
And yours. Thanks.
Thank you.